RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And away we go on this Tuesday, November 6th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Grateful that you decided to join us today. Lots to get to. Say that every time. It's true. Got a lot of reaction to the college football weekend, to the NFL weekend, the rankings, second rankings coming out tonight. We're going to preview that. I think it's a foregone conclusion how it's going to go. We're going to talk about it, though, and kind of where things may be headed on that. But more importantly, how things, for me, how they look inside the film room. So, ton to get to. Going to remind you about a couple of things. We've got a new member of the family that we're going to talk to you about again. They've been with us before. Going to talk to you a little bit more. So be sure to check that out here in a little bit. We also want you to become a member of our family, LandryFootball.com. You know, we do this podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. We have a Rush the Field podcast, which is a college football podcast only. We talk college football and the NFL on this podcast. We go in more of a rapid fashion with myself and Scott Seidenberg on the Rush the Field podcast that you can catch every Wednesday on LandryFootball.com and wherever you peruse your favorite podcast. But LandryFootball.com is where we take you inside the film room, where we break the what's happened this past week, what's going on, and how it pertains to this coming week. We basically break the game of football for you, whether it involves players, teams, coaches, schemes at the college and NFL level. That's what we do for you at LandryFootball.com. So we want you to join us there. It's a big way to support this podcast is by becoming a member. And you can check it out for a month, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year. Let us know what you feel about it, what you'd like to see more in it. That's what we're here for. We're here to provide you a coaching and scouting viewpoint of the college and NFL game. So that's what LandryFootball.com is all about. And again, for less than a magazine subscription, you can have access to your own personnel department, your own scouting department, coaching department, because that's what we do for you. We focus a lot on the games during the football season. What's happened, what's going to happen, we spend a lot of time looking at film. Now, we will certainly spend even more time going forward on the draft, on recruiting, all things that touch in a very important way the college football and pro games and intertwine all of them. That's why we have a football website that's unlike any other website. We cover college. We cover NFL. You see some NFL websites. You see some college websites. You see some draft websites. You see... But no one does it the way we do it. We cover all levels of football. How do I do it? No, I'm not a one-man show. I have trained and put a lot of scouts in the NFL that work in the NFL. I've been, my background is as a coach and as a scout for years. Coached at LSU, recruiting coordinator at LSU, coach in the NFL with Bill Belichick, scout in the NFL, personnel guy that worked for Belichick, worked for the Oilers/Titans, have done a lot of consulting work for a number of teams in the league that on coaching and scouting matters, ran the NFL scouting combine, helped conduct coaching searches. So we kind of take all of that, the resources with my background, and combine it with people that can help you learn a little bit more about this process. You know, it's only one person. You can only do so much. Well, who do I rely on? I rely on other NFL scouts in the league to provide information that we provide to you. Other coaches around the college game, around the NFL game, pro personnel people, we're your one-stop shopping football website, and that's what we provide for you. And we're constantly trying to figure out what it is that you like. We're not a fantasy football website, but what we have learned is that people who play fantasy football love what we do because it helps them understand the game better and know more about the game and how it's going to play out to help them with their fantasy selection. So that's definitely all of what we try to provide for you. Some like to, you know, put bets on with their fans or friends, or now that it's legal, bet on it. In certainly the information that we provide for you, we've heard a lot has helped a great deal for people in that direction. So anyway, enough about that, but we want you again to check out LandryFootball.com. Become part of our family. We would appreciate it. All right. We're going to start with at the top, and at the top in football right now, in all levels of football, is Alabama football and the job that they're doing on the world of college football. Now, anybody that's heard me talk about Alabama and LSU this year knows that I think that Alabama is a lot better than even people are giving them credit for. Yes, I'm saying it. Alabama's underrated. I'm saying it tongue-in-cheek to some degree, but some people actually thought, well, we don't know how good they are. They haven't played anybody. Well, you don't know how good they are. I do, and people who know football, people who study film know how good they are. People say, well, they haven't played anybody. Who you want them to play? I mean, exactly. Clemson will likely get their chance against them. Georgia will likely get a chance. I don't know if Michigan or Notre Dame or Ohio State or West Virginia or Oklahoma will get a chance. They've got to earn their chance. Really? There's not anybody that at this stage is excited about playing Alabama, except for the fact that it would mean that they had a really good season to at least get to that level to where they can play against them. They are clearly dominant. I will say this. I said it last week. LSU is not a top five team, has never been a top five team all year long. The film doesn't say so. The offense has never been all that impressive. Yes, they beat Miami, not a very good team. Yes, they beat Auburn on the road, not a very good team. You know, that was a close game, had some calls go LSU's way, or else that's a potential loss. It still wasn't what I would call a great offensive performance, although they did make a couple of offensive plays, and people get excited. What do people do? They overreact. Beginning of the year, the same LSU team that everybody, you know, hey, they're going to be 6-6. There's no one that knew anything about football thought this team was a 6-6 team. LSU has too much talent for that. But I think people were, in some ways, showing their disrespect for Ed Orgeron, fair or unfair, by forecasting that record. Well, people don't know how good these teams are going to be. You hear me say it all the time. How good is this team? But we don't know. Going into the season, these are some of the issues, and Miami's not that good. Auburn's not that good. Georgia, big win for LSU, and that was a statement win. And I know that it fooled a lot of people because the film showed more about Georgia and what they were not able to do in that game and what subsequently they've been able to improve upon more than it did about LSU's prowess. LSU's offense was aided by some short fields, some mistakes by Georgia, and I think Georgia not running the football and staying committed to the run that potentially could have kept off LSU off the field a little bit more. In essence, Georgia, LSU's closer to Georgia than they are to Alabama. I think we know that. But there was a lot of belief, just like there was an overreaction to their 6-6. There was an overreaction to, oh, man, this is going to be the toughest matchup for Alabama. No, it's not. LSU's not going to be the toughest matchup for Alabama. Georgia will play play Alabama better. Clemson or Michigan would play Alabama better than LSU, but they're not going to beat Alabama. Only Alabama could beat Alabama. Only injuries to the quarterback position, both of them, not just Tua, but Jalen Hurts, would derail Alabama because they're not going to have that cycle-down, focused, lethargic performance. But, you know, this is, again, tailor-made for what I would call a dominant performance last week. You probably read it. If you're a member of LandryFootball.com, you were prepared for that. You knew how the game was going to break down inside the film room. We broke it down for you. We talked about it here on this podcast. LSU was going to need an inordinate amount of big breaks in this game. Alabama was going to have to play poorly. Alabama was going to have to turn the football over a bunch. LSU is going to have to get short fields. This was not a game in which LSU could win. Only Alabama could lose it. The only problem is Alabama doesn't lose these type of games. I said it last week, and I'll say it again. There's not one starter on LSU's offense that could start for Alabama's offense. Not one. Not the quarterback, not the running backs, not the receivers, not the tight ends, not the offensive line. No one. Not one. There's some players on that defense that can line up and play for Alabama. No question about it. Rashad Lawrence could play. Devon White could play. Grant Delpit could play. Greedy Williams could play. Tristan Fulton could play. There's some talent on defense. We knew this had a chance to be a pretty good LSU defense this year, even though they don't have a great defensive line. What did we talk about? LSU would have to manufacture pressure. They don't have great base pass rush at LSU. They don't have the elite pass rush talent. So they've got to bring pass rush. And they had some modicum of success against getting some pressure on Tua. But it came with manufactured pressure, adding guys from second, third level to bring some pressure. But it caused them some problems in coverage because, as we also said, Alabama has too many weapons to hold them down for very long. And it was more of a methodical butt-whipping, a line-of-scrimmage butt-whipping, but it was a butt-whipping nonetheless. Alabama, 8 years in a row, has beaten LSU. LSU has not scored since 2014 in Tiger Stadium against Alabama. Folks have been shut out. They can't even score. Listen, I grew up in the shadows of Tiger Stadium. Understand the importance and the traditions and the pageantry that goes along with it. Stadium crowds don't win. Good teams win and are aided by a really good team performance. A well-coached, talented team performance aided by good home field advantage, by crowd noise and whatnot could help. Could help a great deal. It helped the Saints, a really good team, beat another really good team in the Rams. But it does not carry a mediocre team over a great team. It doesn't. It just simply doesn't. And that this LSU offense is mediocre. The defense is definitely above mediocre. Definitely good. The back seven, anyway. Alabama, this is the reaction after the game. Well, Alabama's better. Alabama has more talent. Yes, they do. Why do they have more talent? They've got better coaching staff that recruits talent well. They've developed a successful program, so the success on the field begets recruiting. You know, when you sit there and try to sell recruiting, it's almost people who've never worked in football as a coach or recruiting coordinator in college think that recruiting and coaching are two different things. Folks, they're one and the same. How you recruit is how you coach. How you coach is how you recruit. If you don't have enough talent, you're not doing a good enough job of recruiting it. You're not doing a good enough job of evaluating it. You're not doing a good enough job of developing it. You're not doing a good job of deciding who to offer. You're not doing a good enough job of selling what you have to. It's a chicken egg thing. You've got to win to attract people. You also got to sell opportunity as well. There are different ways you can go about doing it. LSU's talent level is not that good. In the past, under Les Miles, they've not only had a great secondary, but they've had really good defensive linemen. And for the most part, good offensive lines. And really good running backs. And some good receivers. Well, what they have now, and I said this at the beginning of the year, they have a really good secondary, really good linebackers, defensive line that is not deep and as good as they have been traditionally when they were really good, an offensive line that's not nearly as good as it was when they were really good running the football, running backs that are not nearly as good as the ones they've had in the past, receivers that got some young talent at receiver, but they can't get them on the field. That's coaching. And a quarterback that's better this year than what they've had in the past, but still not good enough to win. You can't beat Alabama without good quarterback play. He either has to be a great quarterback or a quarterback that plays great. LSU does not have a great quarterback, and they didn't have a great performance by their quarterback. So, we know how good Alabama is, and here's the other thing. Well, their defense is vulnerable. I've said it before. I even got a question about, you know, in in Tuscaloosa and their local about their Alabama's offensive line. Well, they're not good. This know about the run blocking and all that. What I tried to explain is, if you don't run a lot, you don't establish your pace in run blocking. It's about an attitude. It's about repetition doing it. So if you're constantly backing up pass protection, you're not going to look as dominant when you just need to go in and do it. But when you focus on doing it, this Alabama offensive line is not good, folks. It is great. It's without a weakness. Yes, the tackles are better than the interior three, but that is just because the tackles are great, really great, and the interior three are just great. They're just average great. They run block very well. They dominated LSU's front. They blocked them consistently. They pass protect well. When LSU had some numbers and pressure, they got a little pressure on Tua. Tua was able to solve it. They were able to make the adjustments. And then, oh, by the way, on the defensive side, this Alabama defense that's quote-unquote not a great defense, okay, that's fine. What have I been saying all along? Quentin Williams is the best defensive player that I've graded all year long. The best defensive player that I've graded all year long. And it continued again. LSU couldn't block them. LSU's five could not block a three-man pressures from Alabama. It was dominant. The linebackers played great. I thought the secondary played great. Played a lot of two-deep man under, which they like to do. It's a really good defense. Yes, we get caught up into they gave up this many points and that many points. A lot of those points are garbage points late. They still count, but they're not a reflection of how good this defense is. This defense, if you're looking at the top defenses in the country, Alabama's defense is comparable to Michigan's, is comparable to Notre Dame's, is comparable to Clemson's. I think you can pick up different parts and say Clemson might have more depth in terms of pass rushers, but I wouldn't trade Alabama's defense for any defense, including Michigan's. They're really good. And then, of course, on the offensive side, they're really talented. So, from an LSU standpoint, I want to get into that. Ed Orgeron, after the game, kind of went on the same theme that Jeremy Pruitt went on. Scott Frost went on. We've seen a number of guys go down this path. James Franklin. We got to get better players. We're not good enough. Ed, be careful. I can tell you that the feedback from the players behind the scenes were not happy hearing that. No one likes to be called out publicly when they're doing everything you've asked them to do. Ed went back to his press conference and said, well, and it's coaching too needs to get better. Again, Ed doesn't have a lot of polish. And he says things that he thinks are going to curry favor in a time when things are down, and it was an embarrassing loss. You know, the last year, we coming. Ed's good for a soundbite. Following up on it, not so much. They're not coming. LSU's not getting closer to Alabama. They indeed are getting further and further away. Even though what he said was true, that the talent level is not good enough to play with Alabama. Well, whose fault is that? Let me remind folks that Ed Orgeron was part of Les Miles' staff as a recruiting coordinator. And there's no doubt the last couple of recruiting classes of Les Miles were not as good. But it's always easy, right, for people to say, well, Les Miles let them in bad shape. This is not one of those cases where new people have come in. Oh, there's some staff changes, no doubt. But this is a lot of the same people that have done an inadequate job of recruiting relative to being at the top. If you don't have talent, look in the mirror. Why don't you? What can't you sell? What don't you have? Why can't you get better? You know, people say, well, nobody recruits as well as Alabama. Not true. Clemson recruits the same level as Alabama. Georgia recruits the same level as Alabama. Ohio State recruits to the same level as Alabama. They have as many quality players as Alabama. Now, none of those places are as well coached, as well developed as Alabama, and Alabama doesn't take a back seat to those three. Alabama still has the most talent, but they have the most talent because they can weed out certain issues and they can develop them better. But it's not like they get far better players than anybody else. They get far better players than most, not far better players than those teams. So if you're LSU, what are you missing to recruit like Georgia, to recruit like Clemson, to recruit like Ohio State? Let me tell you what you're missing. You're missing on-field coaching, okay? When talking to prospects and their parents, which I often get asked to do, there was a pretty highly recruited kid that came out last year who I knew his dad, and he called me. You know, anybody that knows my background, I coached at LSU. I went to school at LSU. I live in Baton Rouge. It's my home. Love the program. Recommended that LSU hire Nick Saban when they hired Jerry DiNardo. Couldn't get him. Convinced Nick Saban to come to take the LSU job, that it could be great, even though it never had been since the Paul Dietzel days. It could be great. You can win championships here. You can build a power here. Had to convince him to do it. He came over and he did it. Since then, the program's been good, but certainly not that level. And it's a large due to the fact that Nick left and now is at Alabama and doing it better than anybody. I get it. No one gets it more than me, as I've been a part of that story. The difference is that in order to recruit at the highest level, and I've been a recruiter at LSU, there is a great talent base in the state. But what you have to do is combine recruiting with development and adaptation to what's successful in college football. You've got to be multiple. You've got to play great defense. Yes, that's a hallmark of being great, in my view anyway. But you got to do more on offense than pound the football. You've got to recruit and develop good quarterbacks. They haven't had a good quarterback coach at LSU in eons. Gary Croton was adequate. They have not had one in ages. They've not been able to identify a quarterback, develop a quarterback, because they don't have anybody that knows how. People get frustrated because they think that they're being stubborn. They're not being stubborn. They just lack the know-how of how to do it. I've dealt with these people, these administrators at LSU for some time. They don't know. You don't know what you don't know. With Ed Orgeron, is somebody that is a good coach. He has good qualities. He's not been able to find that coordinator that can come in, that can fix this offense, embrace the modern style of a lot of different RPOs, and be able to recruit players that fit a style in a system, recruit great players, and then adjust your style, which good coaches do, to the players that you have. LSU doesn't have the playmakers. So it's not just strategy, folks, but it is strategy, because when you can't get the most out of your personnel, then you become less attractive to recruits. To finish the story, had a highly recruited player that was thinking about Alabama, think about LSU, and the dad's talking to me. And, you know, I don't tell kids where to go. That's not my role. But when you answer questions honestly, where are they going to go? There's a dozen to 15 players on Alabama's rosters, 4- and 5-star guys from Louisiana. Alabama gets pretty much who they want out of the state of Louisiana because of Nick Saban. Because it is the program in the country, I mean, it's pretty much that way around the country, I know, but because Nick has had a firm rooting in Louisiana, the high school coaches respect him more than any coach in the country. He's had great success. So what he can do, the finished product, you go to Alabama to play for Nick Saban, you're going to win at least one national title. You're going to be the best prepared for the NFL. It's the best place to go, unless you just want to be at LSU because you love good old LSU like I did. You're not going there. You're going to Alabama if you got a choice. So Ed makes the comment, you don't have enough talent. Ed, if that's true, and it is true, you don't say that publicly, man. You're basically saying your kids that you've got to go now to and try to develop. And the ones that are good, they're sitting there saying, what the hell are you doing? I'm watching a team on the other side that's better coached. Maybe I should have gone there. That's the type of response you're getting. It is okay to call your team out privately. It's okay for a kid, a young man that you're coaching, to give you an idea how this works. You've got to get that kid to play at a higher level, every kid, the highest level, whatever that is. And I think you got to do it through technique, assignment, effort, dedication. And Alabama does it at a completely different level. And Ed and his staff, you know, it is one thing to sit there, and a lot of people have, and we hear it a lot from the LSU folks, oh, Alabama gets fair treatment, all that. No, no, quit with the woe is me crap. Get better. Quit pussyfooting around. Get your head out of your ass. Hire better coaches. Recruit better. Coach better. Get more out of your players. And then more recruits will want to come to be a part of it. Because if you don't, it's going to be moot what Alabama does. You're going to continue to gradually regress further and further and further. And then it won't be just Alabama you're looking up at. Recruiting is where they've got to fix this problem. But to fix it, you need to get better recruiters and you need to get better coaching to develop those players. Because let me say this. There's no doubt there was a physical dominance by Alabama in that game over LSU. But let me tell you what else I saw. It was a really poor job of coaching that team offensively. You got to get the ball out quickly on screens. But you saw them have a little success early. Alabama made some adjustments. LSU wasn't prepared for the adjustment. You've got to be prepared. You're going to get the ball out quickly. You got to chop block. Chop blocking is not about physical ability. It's about technique and assignment. Chop them. Chop them at the line of scrimmage. I'm not talking about an illegal chop block, folks, where you engage a guy and another guy hits him. I'm talking about cut blocking. We tend to use that word in coaching. I apologize. I said chop block. I meant cut block. You got to cut them. Cut them. Chop blocks are illegal. Cut them. You got to cut them at the line of scrimmage. Got to block at their knees. Get them down. When they keep batting the ball down, you don't give it up. You cut block. Were they not taught that? Were they not expecting that? That's coaching. That's not talent. That's coaching. Got to get that corrected. Get the ball out quickly. That's how you slow down the pass rush. If you don't have the talent, if you didn't know that going in this game, you don't know what you're doing as a coach. If it takes you, if it takes Ed to the end of the Alabama game to realize that he doesn't have the talent to match up against Alabama, then he doesn't know his head from his rear end. Because that was obvious. I've said it. Even people with less credentials understand that. You're not as good. Why are you not? What are you lacking? What do you need to do it? Need better staff? Get better staff. Get more staff. Do it. Got to be able to figure that out. There's no way LSU was going to win that game. Never thought they would. It doesn't matter to me whether they did or didn't. I'm here to evaluate objectively and unemotionally. What I'm trying to do is explain that it's not always just about, well, we don't have the talent. I guarantee you, you take Alabama's coaching staff with this LSU talent, they have a much better game plan, and more importantly, they would have been developed better to the point where they could do some things. Joe Burrow running the football. He should have been a guy that had 15 carries in this game. Okay, yeah, they were playing zone. Wouldn't have had a lot of success. What they would have done, it would have forced their hand to even play more zone, in which case, then you can work the screen game. Then, you know, you can be careful that I'm going to go up and try to bat the pass because he might pull it down and run. See, that's how you work around less talent. I see every week, because I study tape nonstop all the time, I see much less talent than LSU has on offense around the country that gets more out of it. So, yes, the talent level for LSU is not what it needs to be. Neither is the coaching. Georgia made a statement this past weekend. This is another case. Georgia team that made tons of mistakes against LSU, 4 turnovers, sloppy game. Bye week, made some changes, really more focused on the run, doing a better job teaching it, better job executing it, production's better. Did a good job against Florida, really did a good job against a physical Kentucky team who pretty well matched up well at the line of scrimmage. Georgia blocked them, and defensively, Georgia did a really good job as well, an improving team. Are they good enough to beat Alabama? No, but they're getting better. And they're going to be well coached and prepared, so they'll have a better shot. Real impressive performance. Clemson continues to roll, get better and better. Louisville is a disaster area. You talk about a mess. Louisville's got a huge buyout for Bob Petrino. That's a problem. Or they keep him. That's a bigger problem. Ohio State continues to struggle, barely looking like a bottom of the top 10 type of team. A&M continues to struggle in their late season swoon. How about the job Michigan did and Michigan has done, putting it to Penn State? Yeah, you can see the leftover from last year had an effect. We said so in our film room breakdown. That certainly was the case. How about Mizzou pulling the big-time upset over Florida? Give a lot of credit. Don't think Barry Odom's the answer at Missouri long-term. But his team fought. Impressive win. Hadn't won a conference game this year until they beat the Gators. Very impressive. Purdue, Iowa, really good game. Purdue managed to get it done. West Virginia, how about West Virginia and Dana Holgorsen pulling it out? This West Virginia team's playing really, really well. BC, boy, they are. Chestnut Hill will be rocking as much as Chestnut Hill can rock against Clemson this week. Continue to play well. We kind of saw that coming this year. Good line of scrimmage team, good running game, obviously. A.J. Dillon, very good, very underrated defensive team. Notre Dame continues to win. Lots of talk about how impressive or not impressive it is. They're pretty good. They take care of business. They're a pretty good team. I don't think they've played their best. I don't think they can play with Clemson or Alabama. I'm not sure that they're even as good as Georgia, but they're pretty good. They're pretty good. Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Oklahoma. Defensively, you see them come back down to earth. Just not a good defensive team. Their chances just solely rely on outscoring people. And people, good, the best teams in the country are going to be able to run the football on them, going to be able to score on them, and limit their possessions on offense, and that'll be it. And they're going to be playing defenses that are better than what they see in the Big 12 on a week-in, week-out basis. And so they'll score points. They're just not going to score 50. And it won't be enough. Because I guarantee you, anybody, Alabama, Clemson, certainly, are going to score 50 on them. And Oklahoma won't have enough possessions to score more than 30. Washington State survives against Cal. Thought Cal was going to win that game. I mean, it looked like it was going to be really close. Picked Washington State to win it before it, but as I watched it as the game unfolded, I thought Cal would pull it out. Washington State's doing a really good job. It's a great story. It's a good team. It's a very, very watered-down, mediocre Pac-12 that is not in playoff consideration. Kansas got the opening. David Beatty has been let go. We're going to get into that on LandryFootball.com. Some of the, as the coaching openings come out, about prospects, coaching prospects, how we evaluate it going forward, we'll get into that. But the rankings come out tonight. Clemson will be number 2 behind Alabama. I think Notre Dame will be 3. They're still winning. They're unbeaten, and they beat Michigan. I don't see a scenario where they would change that. I do think Michigan's playing better. The film says Michigan is a tad better right now. But Notre Dame, I still think, will get and deserves to be ranked 3rd. Michigan will be ranked 4th. Georgia will be ranked 5th. People will say Georgia controls their own fate. They really don't. If you have to go through Alabama, you don't control your fate. But I do think Georgia will be 5 with Oklahoma 6. Then I think West Virginia will be 7. Washington State 8. Ohio State 9. Is likely how I see it playing out. Maybe West Virginia will be a tad higher or not. I think 5 and 6 are pretty clear. I don't think there's a lot of drama in terms of this week's rankings. The whole issue is you've got Alabama and Clemson, which I don't think Alabama's going to be beaten because they're so much better than everybody else. I don't think Clemson's going to be beaten because they're good. They are pretty focused, and there's nobody on their schedule that can beat them. Boston College this week will probably be the toughest opponent, but I don't think can beat them. Notre Dame is still got a couple of bumps in the road here, or a couple of tough games, you know, that I think will be challenging, that I don't know how that'll play out. It won't be this week, of course, against Florida State. But you got Syracuse, you got USC. I still don't think Notre Dame's going to lose. So you've got, in my view, those three teams. Georgia, because, as I said, Alabama, I don't think will get beat, will be likely gone. Well, will be gone once Alabama beats them, as I feel they will. Then that really, what that really does is say Michigan controls their fate. If they win out, get in, they will join Michigan. And it'll be only a matter then about who's the 3 or 4 seed. I can't think of a year where people are trying to avoid the 4 seed as much as possible to stay away from Alabama in the first round. But that'll be the debate, who's 3 or who's 4. Michigan's playing better. Michigan would be 1-loss Big Ten champion. Notre Dame unbeaten. Notre Dame beat Michigan, but didn't play a conference championship game. That's where it looks like. Now, if Notre Dame were to lose, it opens up the door for the Big 12. But you got Oklahoma and West Virginia that appear to be playing, headed for a back-to-back matchup, in which case, you could just feel it, can't you? A potential split and knocking out both of them. Oh, the Big 12 office will love that. So I could see those canceling themselves out. And then, of course, if Michigan loses, it would likely only be to Ohio State. So Ohio State, potentially, if the Big 12 knocks itself out, Ohio State could jump in there as a 1-loss Big Ten champion and replace Michigan if they beat Michigan. But that's pretty much where it ends. Because don't see Michigan losing to anyone else. Don't see Notre Dame losing. So, it to me, this is about as less drama as we've seen in terms of how it looks to me on film. But, as we all know, strange things happen. Anything can happen. So, we'll break it down. Got some interesting games this weekend that we're going to break down a lot on Thursday. Fresno-Boise, two of the better teams in the group of five. I think Fresno and Utah State are better than Central Florida in the group of five. Ohio State goes to Lansing. You want to talk about a mess. How about Ohio State? If they lose in East Lansing to Michigan State and then beat Michigan, how about that as a mess? It could knock the Big Ten out. Who knows? Wisconsin, Penn State, TCU, West Virginia. The Horned Frogs are struggling offensively. The Mountaineers will take care of business. Mississippi State has a better defensive front than LSU. There's no question about that. But they don't have enough offense. They go to Alabama. Northwestern, Iowa. Northwestern only needs to beat either Minnesota or Illinois to win the West. Virginia Tech and Pitt, hey, how about that? Everybody's eligible in the Coastal, just like everybody is eligible in the Pac-12 South. How about Bedlam, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma? Interesting game. Washington State goes to Colorado. Auburn, Georgia, oldest rivalry in the Deep South. Texas goes to Texas Tech. Very, very good game. Not much at stake in terms of conference supremacy, but Texas needs it. LSU needs to rebound against Arkansas. Arkansas would love nothing more than to win a big game like this. Clemson, Boston College. We mentioned that. That's going to be huge. And the Clay Helton watch continues as Cal goes to USC. We're going to get into a number of those games. Hey, we've got some questions we want to get to before talking some NFL. I'll tell you about my good friends at Roman. Now, guys, you know this. We're all terrible at taking care of our health, whether it's a knee injury, that bad back that I deal with, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable, you know, rubbing some dirt on it. Hey, I don't need to see a doctor. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to take aspirin. I'm guilty of it myself. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Study shows 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, no awkward face-to-face conversations, or no uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/Landry. Fill out a brief medical onboarding chat with a doctor, and get FDA-approved ED meds delivered to your door in a discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online, get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy. So take care of it. Again, go to GetRoman.com/Landry, fill out that brief medical onboarding, chat with a doctor, and find something that can help you today. Our good friends at Roman, thanks for being a part of our family. All right, want to get to other parts of our family. Our listeners, people who send in questions that we like to address here. Robert asks, why can't Penn State hire top flight coordinators and assistants? Is it because of James Franklin going to small college for assistants, or is it difficult to work with? Is it money? Waste of talent? Yada, what a waste of talent. I'm not. So basically, you know, he's not interested in canning Franklin and understanding that. And nor should James Franklin be in danger of losing his job. He should not be. James has done a really good job kind of leading the program. I think that, like, players need to develop, coaches need to develop and grow. So, Bob, my feeling on James is that he's a salesman. I think he's really good as a recruiter. I think he tries a little bit. He's a little bit over the top with the media. I think he's good with the media. But I think he's a little bit over the top with trying to sell his program, sell what he does, you know, what he is. I think a little less talk, a lot more action is what's needed there. In terms of his assistants, it's a byproduct of not that guys don't want to work with him. I don't think in dealing with him, I don't think he has a great grasp of who the best people are. And I think he is one of those guys that deals with people that he's a little bit more familiar with, and he tends to not want to get out of his comfort zone. And so he tends to go with some of that. I think he also tends to go with guys who are more recruiters first and less in terms of their understanding of schematics, which is one way to go. But I think that it's a program in which you really need to get good recruiters who are very good teachers. I also think this. I think the team is pretty young. I don't necessarily see an issue with just being poorly coached technique-wise by the assistants. What I see is a little bit of a up-and-down roller coaster momentum, you know, get ready, big game. And this year has not been very good. They're not as talented. I think that with James's teams, his teams usually play at their talent level or below. You know, sometimes he gets his guys up to play in big games, and I think we've seen him do that, but I think he's not consistent with it. I think he rides the emotion. He's an emotional guy, an emotional coach, and his teams rides the emotions. I think what is needed is a little bit more of a stable approach. I think that you need to be yourself, but I also think you need to be smart about how you go about building your team, being systematic, being ruthless, being able to finish, you know, doing things to your standard, not to who you're playing. Hiring better assistants is about reaching out there and maybe pushing your comfort level to something where maybe you don't want to go. I think that there's enough to work with there to be excited, but I also have seen this before, that you can't necessarily live off the emotion. And I'm going to give you an example of somebody that's turned it around when I question whether he could do it or would do it. Not could. I knew he could, but would he? And that's Dabo Swinney. Dabo Swinney was fire and brimstone and bring your own guts and this, that, and the other, but he's not a great X's and O guy. He's no different than James Franklin, but he's hired good assistants. He's got a comfort level. And I think because of that, he's been a lot more. I mean, he's still got his nice little country boy way of saying it, but he's with a lot of confidence. You sit there, James Franklin, you listen to him, you don't see a lot of self-confidence. He tries to sell you on how good he is. Our program's great, but it's not elite. Now, James, we don't need to hear any of that crap. Coach your football team. Get your team ready to play. Quit trying to convince people what you are. Your film speaks for itself. So I think it's a little bit more sizzle and not enough steak with James. And I think he's going to have to implement that more onto his staff. Richard asks, what's your thoughts on Sam Bradford getting cut from Arizona? Well, it was inevitable. Josh Rosen has begun to play, done some good things. They're not a very good team, but that's the future. And Sam was brought in to be the guy that can allow Josh to get in and get his feet wet, and now it is, and so there he's gone. If Sam had played well, it's a different story. It's not a good team. Sam will probably still get another job because the lack of quarterbacks in this league, but very expected, Richard. Richard also has, what was the story? Richard's always good with some stories going behind the scenes, even though it may not be relevant today, but it's something that people might be interested in. It says, what was the story behind the facts that the Titans did not want to draft Vince Young, but did anyway? What caused the decision? Very simply, the Titans, meaning Jeff Fisher and Floyd Reese, the head coach and general manager, did not want to draft Vince Young. They were aware of his immaturity. They were aware of that he was not a guy that was going to be a great worker, that he was not someone that was highly intelligent, nor was he a great worker. He wasn't Jamarcus Russell bad, but he wasn't good, and he wasn't going to be that type of a leader that you needed at the NFL level, because at the NFL level, you can't make a play with your feet and your athleticism and get by with it. They didn't want to take him. The owner, Bud Adams, wanted to take him. And sitting there in Houston with Vince Young right there and the Houston Texans, there were rumors that maybe they would like him. And you know, that was Bud overruling his head coach and general manager, taking Vince Young, and it was bad. Didn't work. Chris asks, when you look at the Tampa Bay Bucks, why do you think the front office has failed to properly address the running back position? You hear people say quarterback should be able to succeed with all the great skills, but it isn't the best thing for a young quarterback, good running game. Chris, you bring up some really good points. I think, Chris, I would expand it to say, why haven't the front office failed to properly address a number of things? They've missed on a couple of guys. They've had a couple of guys that hasn't quite, you know, like Martin was good and for a stretch and then wasn't. I think they've looked at some of those guys that are later in the draft that they thought they could get, that they didn't want to take one really high. Your point about having a good running back is absolutely true. Having a good running game as a whole is really good. I think there are a number of problems, Chris, going on in Tampa. I don't think the team is very good. I think that they haven't addressed the running back position. I don't think they're very good on defense. And they've – look, it's not that they haven't addressed it. They've just done a poor job of evaluating. I think there were some good running backs they could have taken. They didn't evaluate them very well and didn't see value in taking them at certain spots. They also haven't done a very good job in their secondary. They also don't have enough players in the front to really affect teams defensively, and they're in a division in particular where the Saints and the Falcons don't play great defense, but they have great quarterbacks. So the Bucs don't have anything to hang their hat on, Chris. They don't have a good quarterback you can rely on. They don't make, you know, Jameis doesn't make good decisions. Jameis forces the football, and you can't win in this league turning the football over. You have to make plays, but you have to be smart with the football at the same time. He makes some plays, not as much as Breeze or Ryan or some of the best quarterbacks, but he makes some plays. But he makes more mistakes, and there's a 6-to-1 ratio in this league, Chris. So you have to make 6 explosive plays to make up for one mistake. You can't turn the football over and come back and make plays. Now, why doesn't he? Well, he's made mistakes since a freshman in college. He's been a problem since high school. I don't think he's particularly well coached, but I also don't think he's a particularly good student. So I think you can point the finger in a lot of different areas, and I think you'd be right. But I also don't think they play well around them either. Yes, they've got receiving weapons, but they don't have a good running game. They also don't have a very good defense. So you get behind in games, you have to come back, you have to force the football. Well, what's going to happen? You got a guy that forces the football and turns the football over. But what's going to happen when you're down in games? You're going to turn the football over more. Even the Phillip Riverses and the Drew Breeses turn the football over when they're down in games. This is not a very good team. It's not a very good front office. Personally, if it were me, you didn't ask this, Chris, I'll throw this in. I think Tampa needs a hard look and a hard scrubbing. I think they need new leadership as a general manager. I think they need a new head coach. I think they need to move on from Jameis Winston, and I think they need to start over. And that would be the best thing for them. All right, we've got another question. We're going to probably answer it on Thursday. We've got a really good question. Let's see. I'm trying to see who asked the question. Name here. BJ asks about doing a podcast on coaching searches, how a coaching search is conducted, and who ultimately decides ownership of the GM. Obviously, BJ's talking about NFL, but I'm going to address this, BJ, on Thursday. And I'm going to talk about college coaching searches and NFL coaching searches. And BJ also asks, what about if the general manager is on the hot seat? I think that is a great question, BJ, and one in which deserves a lot more time than we have to get to it today. So I'm going to do it this Thursday, the 8th. And we'll talk about the GM being in trouble in college, AD in trouble, President, Chancellor. We're going to address all of that and those issues because I've been involved on both ends of that or on both levels of that in coaching searches at the college and NFL level and kind of the complexities that come along with that. So really good question, and thank you for sending that in, and we'll address that on Thursday. Want to get into some NFL discussions this week or this past week and some observations of what took place this past week. New England continues to show what they're made of. They're so well coached. They do such a good job situationally on defense, red zone. Quarterback's good, healthier. Still missing some pieces. They're still missing Michelle, Gronk. Real interesting, though. The Steelers are playing better. Take control. Not complete control, but they're in control pretty much of the AFC North. Look, they put Baltimore to 4-5. The Steelers are 5-2-1. The Bengals are not a threat to the Steelers. We've seen that. The Browns are out of it. The Steelers are going to win that division, and they're going to win it going away. The issue is how much better can Pittsburgh get? How do they deal with Le'Veon Bell coming back? If he comes back, that whole situation. And can they get into the race in the top of the AFC? It's New England and Kansas City, and I think we need to start paying attention and give respect to the Houston Texans. But I still think that we're – and let's give some credit to the Chargers too. I don't want to forget them, but it looks like Kansas City and New England. But Pittsburgh is going to have something to say about it. How about those Texans? They're finding a way to win. Deshaun Watson – I look at them, and I think they're good. I look at the Chargers, and I think they're good. I think they've done really good jobs. I think Bill O'Brien's done a good job. Anthony Lynn's done a good job. But I watch Houston, and I watch the Chargers, and I think they're good, but they're not that good. They're not Kansas City good. They're not New England good. Maybe they're Pittsburgh good. Time will tell. Kansas City coming off a bye, 8-1. Got a one-game lead, obviously lost to New England. That race for the home field advantage is a one-game lead. In the NFC, so let's recap quickly the NFC. New England's clearly going to win the East. Pittsburgh's clearly going to win the North. Kansas City, in my mind, is going to win the West, although – the Chargers are one game behind, and I think the Texans are going to win the South. And, you know, but I really think it's going to come down to New England, Kansas City, and the challenger potentially could be to Pittsburgh. So the chance that maybe one of those teams might have to be Pittsburgh before they face the other, Kansas City, New England. In the NFC, it's similar in a lot of regards. It's the Saints, and I think the Saints certainly with that win at home against the Rams made a statement. They're right there with the Rams. I think the Rams are right there with them. I think if the game is in Los Angeles, who knows, probably the Rams, a little bit of an edge. And if the game in the playoffs, if there's a potential NFC Championship game in New Orleans, I'd favor the Saints. But here's the thing about it. The Rams are going to win their division going away. You know they're going to get a bye. With the Saints, it's going to come down to taking care of business and then beating Carolina in those matchups, because Carolina is right behind them. Carolina is to the NFC, which Pittsburgh is to the AFC. Physical football team, athletic quarterback. Pittsburgh and Roethlisberger is a better passer, but Cam Newton is playing well. North Turner's done a great job with that offense. The defense is pretty salty. This Carolina team is no joke. They're really good. They're the third best team in the NFC. They're better than Minnesota right now. They're better than the Eagles. If you ask me right now, it's the Saints and the Rams, and it's about home field advantage. Now, the thing about it is while they're tied, we know the Saints have the head-to-head. So it's important for the Saints that they keep up with the Rams and just equal the Rams' record, and they'll get home field. And if that's the case, it's going to be tough for anybody to go into New Orleans and win. The Rams would be the only team that could do it. Don't like anybody out of the North. Don't like the way Minnesota's playing consistently. The Bears are pretty good. You know, the East, much the same. The Redskins are nothing special. We saw Atlanta took care of them. Philly just is not the same. Dallas is bad. The Giants are worse. It's just not – there's not a whole lot there. If you look at the NFC, it's the Saints and it's the Rams. And then it's – to some degree, the Panthers, who I think can be a player in this. And then it's like Minnesota, Seattle, Eagles, anybody wants to participate? Anybody want to become involved? Because they're teams that had some expectations but have done nothing thus far this year. So that's a look at it. We've got a really good matchup. As I mentioned, Carolina is the NFC version of the Steelers. Well, Carolina and the Steelers play on Thursday night, in which is going to be a great NFL matchup. Some of these Thursday night games are not very good. This one's going to be really good. We got Detroit, Chicago. The Saints go to Cincinnati. Atlanta goes to Cleveland. New England goes to Tennessee. Kansas City's hosting Arizona. You've got the Chargers going to the Raiders. You've got Seattle going to the Rams. Dallas going to Philadelphia in a, you know, as much as that was an elimination game for Dallas, they could be eliminated in Philadelphia for sure on Sunday night, week 10. Then, of course, Monday night, Giants and the Niners. So we'll get to that. Okay, folks, that'll wrap it up for today. We appreciate you joining us, the patience that you've given us in breaking down everything in the world of college football in the NFL. Reminder that if you have a question, send it to us at LandryFootball.com. And we'll address it here on this podcast. Reminder, again, to join LandryFootball.com. Check out our membership packages, the lowest we've had ever. So check it out here during this football season. Appreciate you joining us. And check you out at see you on LandryFootball.com for all the latest promo breakdowns and all the latest news from around the college and NFL game. Talk to you Thursday, everybody.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is a Crush Performance Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
The NCAA generates massive amounts of money with little or no expenditure because they don't have to pay the players. So, for example, the NBA last year the NBA generated $7.4 billion of revenue. Major League Baseball, for the first time, broke $10 billion. The NFL, I think they're well over $11 million. And the goal for the NFL by 2026 is they want to break $26 billion in revenue. How they're going to do it, I don't know. Ticket prices are already expensive. That only goes so far. But if I were to ask you, and again, I asked you earlier, if you knew how much revenue the NCAA generated last year, would you take a guess at that?
Well, basketball alone would be massive. So when you factor in football, you factor in all the bowl games, that's going to be a really big number. Like, that's going to be, that will be right up there at the major leagues, if not more, because of all the leagues that it covers, all the sports it covers.
Yeah, you'd think so. So if anybody out there is by their phone or their Googles, as long as you're not driving, just Google NCAA revenue 2017. $1 billion. For the first time ever, they just broke $1 billion in revenue. Now, we've got to get a forensic accountant in there to break this down, because I believe, I'm with you, I couldn't believe the number was so low. But even at $1 billion, without the players earning a cent, that is concerning. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about what's going on in the NCAA and players not getting played. You have talk about just the environment of the players working for free, only getting a salary cap. Here's my take on it. Pay the players. And pay them whatever you want.
Crush Performance with Jeff Crushell can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.